morning. Good morning. And once again, welcome to our Sunrise Project weekly support group call. I'm so happy you are here this morning with us for our safe space of solace and peace, and where we are here filled with love and compassion and a mutual desire to heal, starting with ourselves and, of course, our families. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I have practiced all of that this week. I say that often, but it's been really quite true this week around acceptance, around courage and wisdom. Today, I am so excited to have with us a very special guest. Tyel Hayes is a dear friend, and he is here with us as we celebrate Pride Month. Tyel has been an integral part of some of the world's most prominent brands, infusing a fervor for authentic inclusion and empathy into the art of brand building. A graduate of Hampton University and an MBA holder from Purdue University, Tyel started his career at Johnson & Johnson and later contributed significantly at Procter & Gamble. He has led global insight development for brands like Tylenol and Listerine and has played a key role at BET Networks, where he eventually became Executive Vice President of Insights and Multi-Platform Analytics. Tyel's leadership and initiatives such as the Black and Iconic Soiree and HB We See You, and I love that, HB We See You, all of you, that work showcases his dedication to both professional excellence and meaningful societal impact. Tyel also runs a research firm called Modulize, Inc., which he does in his spare time. And that research company, with Tyel's leadership, is the company that did all three of our groundbreaking Crown research studies. Crown standing for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. And those three studies confirmed what we know to be true, which is race-based hair discrimination exists both in the workplace and in schools. And so Tyel has done all three of those studies and continues to do more groundbreaking work. And in fact, just recently at BET, delivered the first Black male voting study, which was incredible, just last week. Incredible, incredible insight. So he is quite modest and humble, but he is an incredible researcher, business leader, executive, and I'm proud to call him my very dear friend. Tyel is a sought-after speaker and an active community servant, holding board positions with the National Hampton Alumni Association, Incorporated, and Live Out Loud. You know, we got to get the Incorporated together, or the Howard, the Ohio State University, and Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. We have to get, or yours, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Incorporated. Always very important. And I'm not saying that to be funny at all. So anyway, as I ended on your bio, thank you for being here, Tyel. I know it's early. I know it's a lot going on, but I appreciate you being here this morning. You're always a yes. You always are there when I need a friend, a shoulder, a guide, someone to give me some insights. I appreciate you. And this morning, we're going to focus on pride, and it's National Pride Month. And how awesome is that? And what I know about you, Tyel, is you are the living, breathing embodiment of Living Out Loud, which is one of the organizations that you were on the board for many, many, many years.
Yes.
And so I'd love to start by having you share your story. You know, how did you get to be growing up in Virginia? You know, how did you start to live out loud? What was your journey? And what was that moment, if you remember, when you decided to invite people in?
Oh my goodness, great question. So Kelly, thank you first for having me. This is an amazing platform. I've been watching this platform grow over the years. And so I'm so excited for the work you're doing. So this is very valuable work. Thank you everyone for joining, because I think ultimately our children need advocates, we need learning. And so having spaces like this allow us to be in community with each other so that we can just hopefully help change some outcomes.
Yes.
But, sorry. My story is I'm a really I'm a I'm a I can make this long or short. I'm gonna make it short, tight. But as you mentioned, I'm from Richmond, and what was interesting about being from Richmond is that I grew up in what I would call a pretty bifurcated family. On my mom's side, we were pretty clear roles. Gender roles are very clear. Sexual orientation roles were very clear. How you presented, but on my dad's side, it was much more fluid. On my dad's side of the family, I had a family member that identified now with new words now as what would be now trans, some not non-binary, bisexual, and also just queer. And so, going to my father's house and visiting that side of the family, you would see this like, wow, it's a little different here. But I will tell you a key part of the story where I stayed in. I didn't invite folks in. When I was in the fourth grade, I'll never forget this because the memory is very etched in my brain now. I'm riding my bike down the little hill to go from my mom's house to my aunt, from my house to my aunt's house. And my aunt lived like a block from us. And I remember the police were all around her complex and the ambulances were all there and they had blocked off the entire block. And I was like, wow, that's weird. And they were like, you can't come down here. No one come down. And I would think, you think you know something happened. Long story short, we had found out that a man who lived in the community in the complex where my aunt lived had passed away from HIV, had passed away from AIDS. And at the time, that point in the 80s, it was like a biological disease had been released into the atmosphere, the way they locked down. And I remember that moment as a space, as an affirmation without anyone saying anything that there was something wrong with him. So that's how I internalized that as a kid, that like, oh wow, look at the response. Like he something's really wrong. And not that he did anything bad or but I didn't ever want to be that center. And so I think that was one of those early moments where I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just hang out.
Because people were
Especially
scared of the
very
disease
fair.
back then,
Very,
and
very
there was
fair.
not there it's still not a cure, but there was not medicine to really help.
Yeah. And I would say like there was no pathway to life. Like there was no pathway. It was
There was
only
no
death.
pathway to life. That's it.
Only death is what the prognosis was. So, that really shaped for a lot of people in my age group, how we then approached life, a lot of spaces there. So ultimately, but the body wants what it wants. And so I then begin to just explore. Hormones come, hormones go. And that's why it's interesting when there used to be a lot of narrative, especially in my generation, our generation, where it was like someone was making you this. So something must have happened to you. And what I'm thoughtful about as a parent now is the idea it's just hormones. It's how my brain is wired and it is my hormones. So when my hormones kind of are released out, as all kids do in high school, you start to think, like, wait a minute, well, this is just what I'm just like I naturally want, peanut butter here, food there, blah, blah, blah. Like it was something, it felt so natural. So long story, less long, I ultimately invited my mom in during college. And that was the first time where I, and so it's a pretty funny story. My motivation was I wanted to go out to a club with my best friend. I just met this guy who is now my best friend. And he's from Richmond. And he was like, all right, when you come home for Christmas, let's go out. And I was like, all right, I can't go out and my mom see me standing in line, or someone in my family see me standing in line. So my mom comes and picks me up for Christmas break, and I'm driving home, and I'm telling her, and I remember she's in the minivan, and she takes her hands off the wheel, and I was like, Mom, grab the wheel. So she like grabs the wheel back, and the car kind of spins. I was like, whoa, that was a lot. It was a funny moment, and she took it okay. It's interesting. She had a mixed set of
You did
emotions.
it while she was driving? You
Yeah,
told
my
her
dude,
when you just.
it's interesting because I've learned about me that, I don't know, call it the whatever about me. Something can, it will sit, and then at some point it has to come out. And when that moment is, this is it. And I've learned to just live with the consequences of that. And some say it's the Pisces in me. I don't know. But when it comes, when it I'll sit it. I'll sit it. Then at some point, I can't anymore.
It's
So anyway,
just
long
done.
it. So she did that. I told her she didn't have the best response.
Oh.
And to your point, it was interesting because even though she had those experiences with like a couple friends at work who were gay who had died, and you know, seeing some of the other challenges on my dad's side of the family, you don't know what's the cause and the effect. We're going to talk later about the mental anguish that I think exists with many queer people and how we don't have outlets. So that may then manifest itself in some different ways. And but then looking at it as a society, you're like, well, what's the cause and what's the effect? And so she thought I was sick. And I remember I looked at her, I was so disappointed. It's one of the very few moments in my life I was disappointed in my mom. I was like, really? Like, you think I'm telling you? Because that was the experience of many people. To give her some grace, the experience of many people was you tell your mom, you tell someone because you're about to die. So I tell you why I'm about to die so quickly. And so just to have some peace. And that had been her experience. So, but yet, about a month later, I get a letter in the mail. And she's like, I want you to tell the rest of the family because I don't want you carrying this thing around. And at this point, my mom had been diagnosed with cancer. So the roles were a bit at birth. She was beginning her exit from Earth. And so she wanted me to live out loud. And that letter, which I still have somewhere, I need to probably find it and give it to my kids. It was a wonderful letter that really set me on the path to say, let me think about life really differently, because I think one of my mom's, you know, last wishes for me was that I didn't live in any kind of shame or I didn't live in any kind of fear. And so she was like, you know, you tell the family, and if you have any problems, you let me know. And I was like, okay, all right. All
That's
right.
the mama bear, you know.
They're gonna come out. So that's my story. That's kind of how I that's what started
Awesome.
this journey, and kind of how I got here.
Was meeting someone at in college at Hampton. So that's now your best friend.
Yes, I met him and we started hanging out, and we
That's
have been
awesome.
partying now for almost 25 years, almost 30 years now.
I
So,
love it. I love
yeah.
it. And a couple of things you said I want to just ask about, also just to clarify for the people that are here today who may not know the evolution of the terminology, which I learned. And so when we were growing up, the word was gay or lesbian, one of those two. And then somewhere transitioned to LGBTQ plus. But then there's all kinds of nuances within that. And what I've been told recently, with your guidance as well, is that the proper term now is queer. Is that correct? And can you share more?
And so you think about the intention of the term, right? The intention of our community has always been to be inclusive, and that's actually something that's really different about our culture versus many, is that, you know, we are very thoughtful to let everyone in. And so that's the letter started growing to a place to where it became impractical to
That's
just
right.
like say all those letters now in every context, every time you're speaking. And so where society has adopted is the idea as a coverall, especially in quick communication, queer
Right.
becomes a catch-all to just be inclusive of everyone on the spectrum and where that is. And that includes both sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. That because all three of those are fundamentally different. Now, once you get down to the individual level and you're talking to someone very specifically, it is important out of respect to understand what those person's nuances are, right?
That's
So
right.
that you're showing some sign of I see you, and there's a mutual level of respect there.
So then to that point, though, to understand the nuances, is it important to, and I want to also go back to something else you just said about gender identity, sexual orientation, and gender expression, and how those three things are different, just a quick double click on that. But within the continuum of the letters, and it's LGBTQ. Q I A A plus. Do you have to know all of it, or is it really just the LGBTQ?
Well, I think
Because I look at the whole glossary, it's a lot.
It's important to understand those nuances, because as you meet a person, right, the way bias works is bias is allowing us to make shortcuts. So bias is like, I see you, identify you. My brain is telling me who you are, and I then put you in a box, and I connect with you in that way. But if you don't expand the number of rooms in your house, right? And that's what each letter does. So think of each letter. I would offer to everyone, think of each letter as expanding the room. So when you meet someone, you can put them in the right room. And
That's
then
great.
that way they're comfortable, you're comfortable, everyone's having a great time versus like, don't put me in the wrong room because then I might not be safe. The conversation
Okay.
in that room might not be appropriate. And ultimately, I might not feel comfortable or even safe in
That's
those
right.
spaces. So I
That's
my my ask is for anyone who's out there who's looking to be in community, think of the letters in that way and really giving yourself the opportunity to just be aware, right? And then move through that.
right. And I sh for anybody that might actually be seeing their computer, this is this glossary that I was talking about that, has the definitions, but really the queer is the umbrella term that's more include most inclusive, correct? Most inclusive. Okay. All right. I'll stop sharing my screen. I did want you to double click on those three terms, sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression, before we talk a little bit more about your family, if you could.
Yeah, because it's really important. I think we made it so, I think about the evolution of inclusion, right, in this country. And you look back at any group that has fought for inclusion and how lazy bias allows you to be when you're the person in power. When you're the person in power or in majority, you could be really lazy with how you talk to people. So imagine any group, how men talked about women, how white people talked about anybody non-white, how black people spoke about Spanish people, right? We can get really lazy in our approach. And so as we look at this, it's important to level set that sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression are three very different things. And each individual has a different combination. You have each of us on the phone, we have our own combination of this. This isn't relegated to the LGBTQ plus community. This is everyone. Everyone has a sexual orientation. Everyone has a gender identity and a gender expression. And so being really thoughtful about that. And the identity is the inherent and enduring emotional, romantic, and sexual attraction to other people. That's your those and that's what I call those hormones. That's the part that I can't control. I believe science says that you cannot control that. That is how you're wired. Identity is your innermost concept of yourself as male, female, or blend of both. And I think that, as in America, we are very binary, but most cultures around the world historically have had some blend of gender. Most some cultures even revere people who are in who sit across both and saw them as messengers from the heavens, that they were able to be fluent and understand pieces there. And then gender expression is your external appearance to one's identity, which if you are around youth today, you literally know that that can swap. Right. I'll give you the example. I'll go back to the day where I'm from. I think TLC versus En Vogue had a very different gender expression when they launched. TLC as a group had a very different gender expression as they went through their career. Like it started off really baggy, very boy, very masculine, condoms on the eye, and then it got really sexy and really
Right,
like
it changed
body.
over
So
time. Yeah.
I want us to be thoughtful that these things aren't relegated to the community and something that we can be like, oh my goodness, it's too much. It's too much. Like, no, it's been here. It's how we've been doing things
It's
for thousands of
everywhere
years.
and
It's
it's
everywhere.
everyone.
Yeah.
I love that. One other thing I want to do before we talk about your family,
Yeah.
your beautiful family now, this flag and this can you talk about the evolution of the pride flag? This
Yeah.
was used for me when you shared.
Yes. And it goes back to the fight for inclusion, right? And the idea that the initial rainbow flag was the kind of catch-all. But we start realizing as a community, if we wanted to be inclusive, that there were very specific identities that were gaining enough in population and desire that they wanted something unique for themselves. And so the idea that so the transgender flag came because again, transgendered individuals have a very different experience than your average, gay or lesbian person that might be living in their town that no one may may not ever even know, right? You could quote unquote pass for decades and no one ever know, right? And go to work every day. But generally when you're transitioning, because you're transitioning, there is a point in time, right? So all these groups, and then if you think about, but then what was really important, each group then wanted some of their own space. You know, bisexual people have their own unique challenges, especially in intra the community. And there was some talk around being thoughtful, like intra the on the community, what can we do? Lastly, I'm very proud to say I lived in Philadelphia for a number of years, and Philly really pushed to bring the Black and Brown into the conversation in a unique way, because what we have found is that even though Black and Brown people literally started this movement, the first brick that was thrown at Stonewall was by a Black trans woman, and a Brown Spanish woman with her there, a Brown Spanish trans woman there fighting that battle. The early advocates were Black and Brown trans people that started Stonewall. The credit has been absorbed and reflected back through a very white gaze, a white male gaze, a gay white male gaze. And so it was like we somehow started on this movement and got left out. So therefore that's where Philly was very thoughtful of bringing the kind of Black and Brown in. So that's where you see the kind of new flag. And what I'm excited about is many brands as Pride Month this year, you see people going away just from rainbow now to a more
It's
inclusive.
wonderful. And for people who are listening, maybe on your phone and don't see it, basically it's the Pride flag is on the right hand bottom right side, and there are additions for the transgender, as well as Black and Brown communities, in that sense, on the upper left. And so I see that now in various places, and I go, oh, that's wonderful. It's been updated. It's great. So you spoke a little bit about your family. I'm going to stop sharing the slides. And I have the pleasure of knowing your family. And so I'd love for you to share about your family and what the current makeup is and a little bit about your children.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is parenthood is a wild ride. Right. I think I'll start by saying that you think, especially someone like me that's like type A, you know, super focused, I'm a goal setter, a goal achiever, that when you enter this space, that you're gonna figure it out. You gotta figure it out. Oh, I know what I'm gonna do now. Because I have at least one model, my model. And I got the model of at least my sibling. So I can putting all that together, I'll figure it out. So let's start with my nuclear family. So my mom had six children before she passed away. And of the six children, three of us identify as gay, three is straight. And so what's interesting, because for all the diversity on my dad's side of the family is my mom's side is now my mom's kids, where we're all very diverse. And then inclusive in that is my now sister who is trans. So I have a sister now who transitioned in her 20s. And so that's my kind of immediate nuclear family. Then in my family, I met Nelson about 20 years ago now. It's been 19 and a half years I met Nelson. And so we adopted our first child 11 years ago. And Brooke is now 11, be 12 in about a month, and about a year ago. And then there's TJ. TJ came 8 years ago. So we have two children. Brooke decided about a year ago to begin transitioning. And so Brooke now goes by he, him pronouns, moves through life as a male, and moves through life as and such, and we've been working through that. And then TJ, we're gonna see where this all lands. But TJ is very extremely expressive. Gender expression is very fluid for TJ. And so, you know, it is sometimes after school, it might be some tool, or it might be a baseball shirt. And I just go with the flow. So I have to just act not surprised. That's my job.
Love that.
Act like this is very normal. When you're like, what did you just have? You had this? Okay. Or he wants to come and sing a song for me and do a performance, and he'll, you know. So TJ is our little future budding creative.
Love it.
And so that is our family. So we, and then Brooke is also mixed race and has blonde hair and blue eyes. So we are, when you see a photo of us, it is really interesting because we
Great
look
picture.
as diverse and different as we are. And so we are really a living manifestation
It's
of
so great.
the world that we're trying to build. So that's the family structure.
Can you, how was it for you when Brooke, it was Brooklyn before, right? Brooklyn. When did he decide that he, I want to make sure I'm, respectful. So when Brooklyn decided that he felt he was Brooke, when did that, how did that happen? And how was your response?
It's so interesting because it was it was fifth grade. We found there were some signs right before fifth grade started. And I remember we would go shopping and it was like this idea that like, but all kids are in like sweat. So you're kind of like, okay, you don't want to dress up to go to brunch. Fine. Whatever. I was more angry about that because you got two gay dads and we live and we go to brunch in New York City. You dress up, you look nice because
Right.
we're
You look
like
nice.
sitting. And I'm just like, oh goodness gracious, these kids, right? And now looking back on it, I'm realizing that those were some of the early signs of expression where Brooke was wanting to present a little more non-binary in gender expression. And so fifth grade happened. It's the third day of school. At Brooks School, you have sports, and the sports teams are divided by gender, because it allows them to play other schools that are single gendered schools. So that was the reason why.
But that's
And
all schools, right? That's all schools are that way, pretty much.
not all, not yeah, most yeah, but it does a yes, but it but there are they're generally. There are generally enough students to where you can have a girl and a boy basketball team
I
versus
see.
the school's small, so you only have one,
I
which
see.
means people who identify as male play baseball, people who identify as female play lacrosse. And
Okay.
that's the kind of,
Versus having both,
yes.
I see.
So we get a phone call from the head of DEI at Brooks School, who's become a friend of ours because I served on the parents, the PTA's DEI committee, and led that with her. So we were very familiar with each other. So she calls and I was like, that's weird. And she's like, hey, I gotta talk to you about something. So Brooke went to baseball practice today, and the coach reiterated that, just a reminder, everyone here, baseball is for people who identify as male. And Brooke said, I identify as male. And so the school called us and told us that. So that was the first time we'd ever heard it. We had
Wow.
that. All summer, Brooke had been excited about playing baseball. So excited, ready to play. And I was like, okay, all right. So we're like getting ready, buying cleats, doing all the things. And so that was how we all found out. So that was an interesting first day. So we found out, and I am a big child of, I'm a big proponent of letting my children advocate for themselves. So I said, can you put Brooke on the phone, please? And they put Brooke on the phone, and I said, so I want to be clear. This is what the school is telling me. And Brooke was like, yes. I said, so you're telling me your decision is you identify as a male, you want to play. Brooke said, yes. I said, all right, okay, cool, thank you. Hand the phone back to the school. And I said, all right, well, Brooke's going to play baseball then. So we're done. That's it. And I think it was important
Wow.
for me to be that definitive and that clear. Like I have in these moments of if I'm shaky with them, it opens the door up to like a lot of potential problems. So I had to be really, really clear and deliberate. And so Brooke got home, we went and got ice cream around the corner, and we talked through it, and we were like, well, just tell us this. And what I realized is Brooke is very sensitive and very caring and really, really nice person. And have been carrying around all this responsibility of how Brooke thought we would respond, how we would react. And so it's a wonderful lesson that our children, the love they have for us as parents runs so deep that they can hinder their own and suppress their own desires to make their parents happy. And we're doing the same thing with them. So without any communication, you can open all this trauma up because you are ultimately just both trying to satisfy needs, but without communication, we're not really clear on what those needs are. So we're missing the mark completely. So That was our first day, and we've been on the journey since then. And so
Amazing.
that's where the journey is. And so
A big acknowledgement and an acceptance. And
yeah.
that's what to me, that's the biggest lesson. That's why the serenity prayer is so powerful, because many of us, including me, don't accept when our children say something that is not what we might have on the plan for them.
Right.
That's how we were with Kyle. I don't want to do this anymore. We're like, you won't do that because that's what the plan is for you. And
Plan.
so
Plan.
it's really beautiful, Tayel, that you were so clearly in her corner and accepting of her. Now him, I'm sorry, I'm defined. I don't mean to be offensive, but
No problem. No,
I said in that room,
yeah.
this is me, and you got on the phone. But she also, what I think is beautiful, she felt comfortable to tell you the truth in that moment. And so that's also beautiful. Many of our kids don't feel comfortable. I think that's what you're saying. Don't feel comfortable telling us the truth, right? Because they're afraid of the reaction.
Yeah. And I think that that's where, and so I see a question there in the chat of like, did we think it was just about baseball? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'll be dishonest. I was sitting there like, oh, it was all peaches and cream from there. No, we absolutely thought that this was about baseball. So we were like, okay, let's give it a few weeks, see where this falls. But then when we realized that this was the thing, we moved. I know from my work on Live Out Loud that gender dysphoria is the cause for a lot of self-harm and self-hate in the community. It's not the gender identity, it's the dysphoria. And that dysphoria is often created in spaces like this. So it was very important to me that we not create a space for dysphoria. So we actually got Brooke. So we found a, it took us about maybe a month and a half, and we about 2 months probably. It was November, and we found a gender child therapist who specializes in transitioning children, non-binary children. And there was an investment. We had to pay out of pocket. It was an hour from where we lived. So, with our crazy business schedules, Nelson does all the driving. And so we took Brooke there to the session for a number of weeks and got a formal diagnosis of like, is this just about, baseball, or is this really? And what the therapist came back and said is that, your sense of gender is really clear in your mind. Just like my sense of gender has always been clear, we have to give, and that mine has been clear since I was a child. I've never not thought I was a man. Like, I've never once, right? Just as I'm very clear about that. We got to give kids who are transitioning that same room. And I think so many of us, so many parents, and unfortunately, so many Black and Brown parents, we spend so much time thinking about this devil that we believe, or we've been told is causing all these problems, that we are not actually opening ourselves up to the idea of the grace that is actually available to us, that we've been offered this opportunity to be invited into someone's journey like this. And so I think it just creates this interesting bifurcation in our community where our children aren't being seen because it really struggles with our personal brands and our personal plans. And so I had to, we had to go through that journey. We had to give ourselves a ton of room. And I remember calling I remember calling my best friend, and that's where I could have my like doubtful times. I'm like, I'm worried. And then I know all the data, so then I'm worried, and it opens up a lot.
Right. And so much hate in the world.
For such a wonderful child, like I don't want no child deserves it, but I definitely don't want my child to experience it. But it isn't even how my child is wired. So the idea of that. But what my best friend said to me, I will never forget, was he said, "There's no better house for two children to go through this than yours."
Amen to
So
that.
really all about, that you've been given this gift, because our what we know about our children in this community on that rainbow slide that you showed is that there are very few communities. I would say neurodivergence is another one where oftentimes the children and the parents don't share that those same characteristics. And so you have to now, we, the children aren't ours until they become adults. So we as a community are doing all this work to and hoping that the gap from yourself and your and who you are is not too wide when you come into our community and we can take care of you. Because some children are living in hellish situations, their families, and there's nothing we can do as a community because they're not our children yet. They don't become ours until they're 18.
18. And speak to that more because I learned a little bit about Live Out Loud, the nonprofit that you're a huge part of. Can you speak about that and some of those situations that you've seen, and how can we,
Yeah, it
as a
is.
community, do better to support children?
Yeah, I think that we all have to be advocates and allies for all children. And I think whether we are fighting the battle of too many Black boys are being diagnosed on ADHD medicines to Black queer kids, like we have to be advocates inside of our own families oftentimes. And because what we know now is that over 60% of gay of queer children, queer identifying children, have experienced some type of hate speech inside the home. And so,
Inside the home, you said.
yes, inside the home. And you have to be, and it hits you. And what that does, it is very analogous to domestic violence, because in many ways, it is domestic
Yeah,
violence
it is.
against children, where you're always on guard. Because you don't know when the F word might slip out. You don't know when someone may misgender you as an insult. You don't know when someone may physically harm you because you're doing something that is outside of the gender norms. I just may be hungry and cooking, but I may have a father that thinks that a kid may have a father who thinks that women aren't supposed to cook. So because all this energy is in the house, I'm just cooking, and now I'm getting yelled at. Or I'm getting isolated for 2 days, or I bring three girls over, no one's my girlfriend, so everyone's looking now. So then I get questioned. Are you? And it's that, imagine being a child and living in that. And unfortunately, it is parents that make gay youth homeless. It is not gay youth choosing to be homeless. So the homelessness rate amongst gay youth is very high, 4 times higher than the average. And what I want to be really thoughtful about and communicate is that it is parents make queer kids homeless, and we have to
And the
own.
suicide rates are highest. I
Suicide
mean,
rates
the
are high.
highest among Black and Brown youth, but even within Black and Brown youth age 16 to 24, the highest number is queer people that identify, and higher than any other group. It's so depressing, actually. So, well, thank you for sharing. The work that you're doing with Live Out Loud is really to help children in high school, right? And junior high school learn to live out loud and invite people in. I think that's also a powerful concept versus coming out.
And defend yourself. I think the idea, the attack
Yes.
will come, right? And I am very thoughtful that, we have to pour into them mentally with information, emotionally, so that they can weather under storms, and spiritually, so that they
Yeah.
have a fortitude about themselves that allows them to move through these spaces. And I think, I'll tell a couple of stories of the Live Out Loud kids, just so you guys can really understand what's actually happening. There was a young, I visited a lot of the schools as being on the board, and so I try to stay connected to the kids. And so I remember once going to a school here in Jersey, and this is the school that we helped them get the first gender neutral bathroom of any school in the state of New Jersey. So I need to add that to my little
That's
resume. So
awesome. Yes, you do.
is that we helped them advocate for themselves, and we taught them how to do it. They went to the principal, they went to the school
That's so
board, and
great.
they got it approved to have their first gender neutral bathroom, which is, so looking back on it, it's like, really? They had to fight to get a gender neutral bathroom, but they did. This is back in 2017. But in there, I remember this young trans female to male young boy that's there. And he was making these interesting statements about race. It was during the election. So it was 16. And so we're getting ready for the election. He's talking about like black people and, you know, what black people need to do differently. And I'm looking, I'm like, wow, this is odd that someone in the GSA here is so adamant about race in such a negative way. I then told by his advisor that he is being raised by his grandparents who are deeply conservative, and all they listen to is Fox News.
Oh, gosh.
So as I'm sitting there, I'm like, his views on black. So he makes these statements about Black Lives Matter, and then black kids in the class educate him. The community is like, no, you, that let me break down for you why everything that you're saying is wrong in a really aggressive but safe space. Imagine what this little boy is dealing with around
At
his
home.
gender identity. And can you, I mean, just really think that's what he, if he's adopted that is about black people, what do you think he has adopted about his own community that he's a part of? And how he's wrestling that every day. I mean, every day, every second he's wrestling that because he's dealing with, you know, these pieces at home. And so another story is we have
And so
another,
home doesn't become your safe
it
space.
does
And I
not.
know that's what we
School
want
is.
to create is a safe space for our children and for ourselves. But please go ahead with your other story.
So last story is we give out three scholarships to three exceptional students. And these are students who've done outstanding things in their communities. And this year at the gala, which was a few weeks ago, so a lot of my friends showed up. I left the board, so I was honored at the gala. So my friends were all there, but there was a kid that could not come to the gala and accept his scholarship because the at-home environment was not supportive. But yet had done enough work at school, has done enough work at school in the community to beat out others in the competition to win a scholarship, but yet cannot accept it. Live Out Loud had to tell his parents that it was a leadership award because they would not allow him. And so, I mean, it's these, and we have this every couple of years. There's a student that can't accept.
That's
But
sad.
this year, his best friend, so they're giving this speech, and they're taught his advisors from his GSA get up and give his speech. And then his best friend stands up and he's on FaceTime. And he had gone somewhere private, and his best friend had him on FaceTime. And I will likely never forget that moment of like, this is why we do the work that we're doing, is that he knows that there's people out here rooting for him. You know, they're not in his home, that there is a family that he'll get, that when he gets out of that environment, he can thrive and ultimately live out loud.
Absolutely. I love that story as I'm like fighting back my tears because that's so tragic. But it's lovely that his friend did that. And the work you're doing there and everywhere is amazing. We have somebody who has their hand up. So please, if you're on the phone, you can hit star six to come off of mute. Or if you're on your computer, just unclick the mute button and please feel free to ask a question or a comment if that was still what you wanted to do. I'm not sure because it looks like the hand is back down. If anyone has a question or a comment, feel free. We have Tael for another 10 minutes or so. This has been really incredibly helpful. I appreciate you. Any questions or comments for Tael?
As we wait on questions, Kelly, I want to offer another gift out to the community. I want us
Yes,
to be
please.
really thoughtful about thinking about Sunrise as a platform. I want to go back to something we've talked about a lot, which is the plan that we have for our children. I want us to be also be really thoughtful about the brand that we have for our family. And oftentimes, ultimately, when you think about what a brand is, right? The brand has a purpose, a why it exists. A brand has a set of values that it fights hard for, and it has a set of attributes that distinguish it from other families. And some people will be like, "Oh, I don't have a brand." Everyone has a brand. I think the work really is understanding what your brand is. Everyone has a brand because everybody wants to be distinguished, and no one wants
That's
to
right.
be Stepford. And so, what I have found in this work is, in addition to the plan I've got for my children, that plan is generally predicated on what the brand is, right? So being thoughtful when you take this up to a higher level, and the work that we have to do as parents is be really thoughtful about what is the brand that we are building for our family, and what are things that come in conflict with that, and how we may then induce harm and inner trauma into our children, because we there may be a brand attribute that we really want our family to stand for, you know, in our family. Our kids aren't for a reason. Like, you go back to that brunch story, it was about, I'm like, oh, like we want to be that fabulous family in New York that's having lunch with these great kids. And all this time, my child's having a whole gender identity crisis underneath. And I'm concerned about
like, what they have on.
Right? And then you look back and you're like, oh, wow, I was missing that boat for a whole year. Right.
And none of it matters. I remember going to a Jack and Jill graduation thing, and Chris had on like a tank top and some running shorts and sneakers. But I had done so much work with Sunrise and with therapy and with myself, I could care less. I was like, I'm happy he's alive. I'm happy we're here. I'm happy he's smiling. It's a beautiful day. And I could care less. But that's such a major journey from, you need to put on a nice shirt. Everybody's going to have on. I didn't care what everybody had on. And it's a different, and your children become happier, right? Okay, there's a question in the chat that says, for parents and families who have a community of aunties and uncles, what are some ways we can show up and support the kids?
Yeah.
It's a great question.
Great question, because it's interesting because I've always been really nosy, as my family always. I've always had a thirst for information. That would manifest into me listening to my mom. I would go outside, go to the window, and like listen to my mom and my aunt talk. I could not know. Like, the not knowing would tear me up inside.
Funny.
So I would hear them talk about the family, and they would align. The alignment they would do before a decision would be passed down was, I was like, oh, this is how this works. So I think that the alignment is really important, and that being really thoughtful about how you are aligning with where the kids are. I think asking. I'll tell you, I have a couple friends, most friends will ask, where's Brooke now? Where are we? Where are we on name? Where are we on pronouns? Are we still there? I want to come on and make sure that I'm respectful. And then two, I think be there for the kids and just meet them. I think the normalcy is all people yearn for. And so once we've been aligned, I think being thoughtful about that and being normal. I also think correction. Aunties, uncles can advocate for and push for spaces that maybe parents don't always have access to. And so really, you know, being thoughtful about how you can help other family members have the right pronouns, have others, and that's a role you can play, because it's a lot. It is a lot for parents. It's like, sometimes you are like, I don't, you know, I'll be honest. I'm where I still am with this is, I have not been home to Virginia with my children for a couple of years now. And I'm thoughtful about what that experience is going to be like for my extended family. And I'll be honest, I don't want to, like, I don't want to go to my cousin's house, who's kind of mildly homophobic. And but you can't avoid it when you're in a family and as big as mine, as tight knit as mine, it's hard to avoid. So I think I've been subconsciously just not dealing with it. But, you know, I have to I'm denying my children something by that, but I'm also keeping them safe from something by doing that as well.
Right. And you know that. So that's where the parents' role comes in.
Aunties and uncles can play a role in helping to kind of get grandma straight before I get down there, or get the uncle straight before I get there. So then the burden isn't always on my kid to manage these adult conversations with people.
I think that's right. And being a constant saying, you're worthy, you're beautiful, you're enough, you're perfect the way God has defined you. Yeah. So I want to say this, we have a hand up, but we also have the person who couldn't get off of mute. You're off mute now, I believe.
I can.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I just want to make a comment, and I'm hoping I'll get through this. Yes. So Kelly knows about this story. I'm just going to give a hint. So my nephew committed suicide at age 28. Mm-hmm. And the situation was, nobody had a clue in the family that he had even an issue at all, or was in pain, or was a total surprise to everybody. And to this day, we're not sure why, what happened. But in this discussion that you're sharing, I wasn't even you know, expecting to ever really understand why, but there's some things that you said that maybe are some connecting dots, and that is, he was raised in a, he was a very large man, and sports very physical, you know, physically looked, you know, the big male, the alpha male kind of look to him. So, you know, people project things when you look like big athletic, you know. And so he had a girlfriend who was really pressuring him to get married. He was raised in a homeschooled, raised by an ultra religious family, conservative family, father in the military. So there's all these expectations, right, on him. And he was a musician, wanted to pursue his music, but was sort of felt like he went the finance route and worked at a bank and didn't, I'm sorry, the, trying to get to a quiet place here, really didn't pursue his passion. He went into banking instead of his music. And he lived in Denver. He drove up to the mountains in Denver and he shot himself and didn't, no clue that any of this was happening, right? He went missing and the family and his girlfriend who he lived with, nobody knew where he was. And a couple of days later, the police found him. And I wonder if, you know, in Kelly was the statistics of our brown, black boys and queer, thank you for explaining the queer boys really having the highest rate of suicide. I'm wondering if he felt this. And then when you said something about how children that are very sensitive, which he was a sensitive person, how he might have been wanting to save his parents from it, what you were saying, you know, of trying to make it easy for his parents versus speaking out loud, which brings challenges to the family. And I'm just wondering, I thought maybe that was it. And I've talked to Kelly about this forum, how much it has helped me. And really having our children be open to talking to us about anything.
Yeah.
And we know as a family, the part that's hardest of the family is if we had known that he was hurting, we would have done anything for him.
Yeah.
But we didn't know.
Yeah.
And so we tried to get through this. So to me, you know, one is giving our children the support and whatever they need. Mm-hmm. But two, if you don't know that they need anything, there's just like no hope for saving them.
Yeah.
And so I think the start is speaking out loud, like you say, speaking out loud. Are you hurting? Speaking out loud. Whatever has to be spoken to give our children the permission, encouragement to speak it, to say it, to manifest it. And I just feel this form. Tell our children, mm-hmm. it's okay. I want to know it all.
Yes.
I won't be mad. I won't be sad. I will love you. But explicitly say, even now with Pride Month, tell them, even if it's a queer message, I know I'm not saying it the right way, but that, tell me, you know, so like call that out to tell them, give them permission, give them encouragement to speak it. And that's what I wanted to say. Thank you for letting
me. Yeah. When I want to say I'm really sorry that happened, and I can understand the left, you know, suicide. It really affects the family as much as it does the individual, right? And thinking about that, but your point is that, you know, I want to be thoughtful to all of us. The lesson I think that we can learn, because none of us ever know, right, what the real cause was. But I think the lesson we can learn from this story, the clues that we have, is about these family brands and the pressure that people internalize to live up to, right? And you, whether it, you know, whether it's Bridgerton or our individual families, there's all this pressure that we place on it, being really thoughtful. I think Kelly can send this out later. There's something that we did in our Crown study for girls, yes, where we did a self-esteem assessment. And there's a nationally recognized battery of questions used to assess self-esteem in minors. And we can definitely send it out to the Sunrise group. I have kind of committed those attributes to memory. Mm. And I'll just ask, when we're just talking in the car, just random questions like, hey, have you ever thought about this? Are you feeling like this? Right. And I think it's just a way, because there's obviously clinical evidence behind it, but it gives you a way to just continue to ask questions. I think another thing that I would say is, I want to jump to Corey in a second, is be thoughtful about your vulnerability. One of the ways I think children can feel open to express how they see themselves differently in their family is by you expressing your vulnerability. Times when you didn't have it all figured out. I think oftentimes as parents, again, when we're trying to you know, navigate the master brand, it's, you have to show the brand in its best light at all times, and think showing when the brand wasn't perfect and when we weren't and we were on our journey allows a kid to say, oh, wow, you didn't have it all figured out either. Okay, well, then it's okay for me to not have it all figured out, versus we often present as parents as if we had it all figured out. Yeah. And that's a lot of pressure to live up to.
And I think that's the beauty of the space. So I know, thank you so much for sharing, and we'll continue to pray for you. And thank you for being here and being vulnerable. And there's one last question, I believe. Corey, if you still want to ask your question.
Yes, I'm still on, by the way. The end of the session. But
I have your shirt on. I'm just going to show it. It's the most amazing shirt. Thank you so much.
Oh, you do? Thank you.
I do. It says advocate. Thank you for sending it.
Good morning, everyone. And morning. I also want to give my condolences and appreciate the vulnerability that was expressed regarding the family member that died by suicide. And my question somewhat stems on that. And the child, maybe not, and I don't want to say ever, but it almost feels like ever, wanting to express or state their sexuality. And I wanted to know if you had encountered any children that, even when they have a family that is open, has directly talked about it and given the space, they don't want to say it and live out loud, if you will. There has been, I would say, mild to moderate expressions. And I've have just accepted that and try to do my best to let my child know that if he ever wants to live out loud, that I'm there and supportive of it. And I know one of the callers had indicated the family, if they knew, would have been more than supportive. And I have directly said the thing out loud and given the space directly to him. And I don't know if there's anything else that I can do, but what concerns me about my child not living out loud are his suicidal ideations and expressions of suicide, and choosing to just talk to me about his suicidal ideations, because that, in his words, are what helps him not to do it. Yeah. So anything you can share on that, I don't want to be burdensome or demanding that he, you know, live out loud, but just letting him know that the space and opportunity is there for him whenever he chooses to.
Agreed. And I think that's the right course, is to let him know the space is there without making it feel like, without the, I'm just waiting for you, because let it just be known and be a open room in the house, so to speak. Versus I think sometimes sitting in the room waiting for the person to come into the room with you. There, and that subtle nuance is actually really important, because it takes the pressure off. Mm. The room will be available in the house, but don't sit in the room and wait for the kid to come in there, because then they're like, what's, and so now there, it creates another sense of tension. But I will say, I want us to be thoughtful. Just like at work, I spend more time with my coworkers than my own family in a 24-hour day, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They spend more time with their classmates. So I think you should really investigate the community. What we found, I'm going to make this long because we're at time, but this is really, really important. Brooke goes to a very progressive, liberal private school. And they have had a DEI, as I mentioned, and they have an anti-racist statement they put out. The only challenge that we got, direct challenge, was from a brown kid who has two brown parents who are also gay. Mm. And that was the kid that was telling Brooke, you know, I think it's weird that you're in the boys' bathroom. I don't understand what's, like, it was, that was where it was coming from. So we then had to really be thoughtful about, and luckily in this school environment, it was handled well. But I want you to be open to the idea that there's likely some signals, and all boys are getting tons of signals because the last thing a boy can be in this society is gay. So he's probably getting a lot of signals from or soft or feminine or whatever in the school environment that you may want to be really thoughtful about, that is countering what you're trying to create for him at home. And that is what we see from a research standpoint is the most likely cause, because they are, you know, and it could be one or two people that are, you know, I had my one or two taunters that every day it was a question, why you walk like that? Why your pants like this? It's like, oh my goodness, looking back on it, you know, I don't know what their problems were, but I was the target. So I think I want you to be thoughtful. That is likely where something else is still happening inside the school.
Thank you. Well, it started in high school and now he's grown. And I'm just trying, that's why I didn't want to use the word ever, because now he's grown. But I do appreciate your words, and I will leave the space open.
Thank you so much, Corey. And I wish we had another hour. We don't. I think the school comment that you just made, Tayo, it was really important. And I think any opportunity to tell children that they matter, you know, tell our people that we matter, tell adults you matter. I think that yesterday I was with Chris, my little one, and who's not little, but he's still my baby. And I was on with my therapist, and he came into the room. And so she said, hi. And she said, something just came on my spirit. Is it okay if I share something with you? And he said, yeah. And so she said, I want you to say a mantra to yourself. This is out of the blue. This wasn't planned. She said, Chris, I want you to repeat this. I am an arrow shot from the mind of God, and my only job is to know that I matter. And he looked, and she said, would you say that? And then he said it, and she repeated it. And it was so powerful in that moment. He needed to hear that. I needed to hear that. But it was so clear that you matter. Your only job is to know that I matter. So I think in the spirit of what you just shared, Corey, and what Tayel shared all morning, helping our young people and our adult children and people know that they matter is, I think, what we all can do better, you know, and constantly. So I want to say thank you so much for being here, Tayel. You're always incredible, always phenomenal, and such a great dad and inspiration for me. And I'm going to ask Dr. Vicky, if you're still on, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but would love for you to do our closing prayer if you can this morning.
I'm here. Good morning. Good morning, Tayo. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
This was really powerful, and just a call for all of us to be more sensitive, more aware. And I would love for you to come back and just give us more opportunity to learn, to understand, to know better so that we can do and be better, especially for our children. This was just really powerful. So thank you for who you are and the work that you're doing, and you as well, Kelly. So I'll close this out with prayer. God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you have given to us. Thank you for the opportunity to be in a safe space where love abides, where grace abounds, and where we have the privilege and opportunity to be vulnerable and transparent, to express where we are, who we are. And thank you for Tayel and the work that he's doing in the world. in his own family, with the children that he impacts, with the organizations that he stands for. We're grateful for his life and his work and this assignment that you have anointed him for. Thank you for the Sunrise Project, for our team, and for creating this safe space that gives hope week after week, month after month, moment by moment sometimes. I especially lift up our sister who shared about her nephew and her family. Continue to give her grace during this time of mourning and understanding, ultimately peace, that our pain can become our power and that our tragedy and traumas can become our testimonies to help other people. At the end of the day, God, help us to love one another as you have loved us. And we give you glory for all of these things. In your name we pray, amen. Thank you again, Tael. This was just powerful.
Amen. 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 Love you too, Dr. Vicky. And the speaker that spoke up said, God told me to speak now to share. I don't know who needed that message, but it was for somebody. So thank you. It's for all of us. So beautiful, beautiful morning. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll be back next week, 9 a.m. Eastern. And then the replay will be online if you need to hear that. But thank you. And thank you, Tael. Have a great day.
Great day.
Bye.